Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2019. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. The third quarter wrap-up megacities will have the PDF up by Monday, and it'll be to the printer, so digital plus print subscribers will have by the end of the month, and digital subscribers can buy the hard copy at the store if you wish. It's a good overview of some of the changes happening in real estate. There's a convergence between real estate and the global securities market. As I mentioned during the equity overview tonight, the lower energy cost that comes from drops in the price of energy as a result of new technology can have a big impact on real estate values. So you want to keep an eye on real estate. Real estate as an asset class is absolutely changing. The annual 2018 wrap-up, we continue to roll out material on the web presentation. We now have the movie section up for The Missing Money, and I'll present The Missing Money next week, and then we'll finish writing it up over the next 2 weeks, and hopefully you'll have the PDF sometime by the end of February. The Hang with Stavoren from March 9th to March 16th, we still have four places. That's going to be Bridget Moucher, Ulrich Groniger, Robert Duper, and myself. And great news, Nina Hein, author of the Food for Soul column, is going to join us for the closing dinner on Friday night in Stavoren. In fact, she and Robert and I are going to be flying on to Milan for some of our Leonardo da Vinci celebration. I'll tell you more about that. We have a new special report on Korean hand therapy, a wonderful Swiss homeopathy practitioner named Astrid Nassler, who's a real expert in Korean hand therapy, which is an amazing practice that I hadn't known anything about until I met Astrid and she introduced me. So I asked her if she would do an interview, and I hope you enjoy it. That one we made public. I'm a great believer that any therapy that we can learn, which we can do for ourselves, is another great sort of tool in the toolkit to make healthcare practical and economic. Our theme tonight is fascism through FASB 56. Secret money for secret armies. After a more than clever limited hangout game that went from The Nation to NPR to The Washington Post and CNN, that was all designed to persuade the world that the 21 trillion figure was just a plug accounting figure and really just a joke, it really left you with a feeling that the world was a sewer. And, you know, it just shows you should never give up hope. Matt Taibbi contacted Dr. Skidmore and myself about doing a piece for FASB 56 and Rolling Stone. And both Dr. Skidmore and I went to work and gave it the good old-fashioned try. And it just goes to show you the truth matters and their potential allies everywhere. He just finished publishing a piece in Rolling Stone yesterday. Has the government legalized secret defense spending? Let me read you a subtitle. While a noisy Supreme Court fight captivated America last fall, an obscure federal accounting body quietly approved a system of classified money moving. Great point that they slipped it through during the Kavanaugh brouhaha. It was an excellent piece of reporting in a relatively quick time. I give him credit. And if you're writing for Rolling Stone, it's hard to make this story sexy. I thought he did a pretty good job. And I don't know. One of the things that's very clear from the communications with him and the article he wrote is he clearly understands how important this basically obscure accounting policy is. I mean, we're basically changing the governance model of America from a democratic republic to a fascist country. It's quite extraordinary. Speaking of fascism, Dr. Naomi Wolf did a very good presentation that I put up on News Trends and Stories about the new Green Deal proposal put forward by Congressman Ocasio-Cortez, who was also playing games on the $21 trillion, and just nails the extent to which this is fascism delivered by obscure environmental policy. It's pretty frightening. Now, I think the chances of that going through after some investigation are less than I thought when I first heard it. But either way, you know, these are two examples, one very real, one hopefully not so real, that greater centralization is being aggressively promoted on both sides of the aisle, both Republican and Democrat. It's important to remember that FASB 56 was basically put forward and approved by OMB under the Trump administration and the GAO Congress. So this is completely bipartisan. Now, if you want to understand what's going on in Washington, what you need to know is there's a car crash happening in the U.S. and global bond markets basically as we speak. I spoke about it for a fair amount tonight in Equity Overview. I recommend you listen to that. Essentially, we're currently increasing the national debt at 6% last year and 8% this year, and it's accelerating. Part of it is higher interest rates, but another part of it is trying to replace monetary stimulus with fiscal stimulus for the first 2 years of the Trump administration. Essentially, U.S. borrowers are exploding. Our borrowings are exploding at the same time that Europe and the emerging markets are struggling with high debt loads, and corporations are facing significantly higher maturities and needs for financing. It's like a pig moving through the snake. I refer to it in the equity overview as to what will happen in the debt markets this year as rush hour cometh. But I'm also reminded of the Italian saying, quote, 100 wagon loads of thought will not pay a single ounce of debt. Money and markets. Let's just look at year-to-date returns. I'm talking about total returns, both gains and yield in the market. Fixed income, the U.S. dollar is up 2 basis points for the year. It's essentially flat. Fixed income, the long treasury ETF is down 1.09%. The intermediate down almost 0.5%, down 0.42 basis points. And the bond aggregate flat, down 6 basis points. Junk is up 4.14%. We've had a real rally in the junk market. If you look at the coming car crash in the bond market or the car crash that's happening now, I expect the junk bond market to come under tremendous pressure by the second half of the year. Equities now have replaced all their losses of last year and more. The S&P up 5.22%. The home builders have not recovered. They were down, depending on which one you look at, 25 to 30%. They're up 7.5%. The European ETF up 4.15%, so making up, you know, a little bit less than a third of their loss last year. Germany now up 3.08%. A clear indication, though, that the German economy is softening. Developed markets minus North America up 4.56%. The large caps in China up 4.84%. Small caps up 4.27%. Emerging markets up 5.86%. So the action this last 2 weeks in the equity markets support my contention that this may just be a correction, because it's certainly off to a nice start. Commodity index up 5.86% for the year, and gold up 0.71%, silver up 0.34%. Neither gold or silver had a good year last year. Again, all asset classes were down last year, but I predict gold and silver ought to have a positive, maybe not a gangbuster year, but a positive year this year. Oil now up 20.46%. Remember, it was down significantly last year, so clearly oil continues to show the volatility that we know and love. I want to just start with Africa this week. There was a very interesting article in The Economist. It's posted up at News Trends and Story. Africa is now sending missionaries north to the heathen north to preach the gospel. And in the article, there was a little chart from Pew, and it showed by far and away the most religious and faithful Christians in the world are in Africa. You know, you looked at the map, and I've traditionally avoided Africa because of all the political shenanigans going over the fight for resources there. But looking at the map, you sort of thought, well, you know, maybe I ought to go see what it's like in these areas that have 100% of the Christians regularly attending church. It was a pretty interesting map. Asia, China is clearly slowing. And as it slows, you know, it seems to be instituting more central control and sort of a more paranoia message coming out of both China and Hong Kong. Europe, the Brexit is the endless agony. May's proposal was resoundingly defeated, but she survived a no-confidence vote. Once again, the fear of Jeremy Corbyn saves May. The alternative is so much worse as far as the Conservatives consider. The EU has agreed to an extension. Otherwise, it was going to be a hard Brexit in late March. I don't see how you get around a hard Brexit. I think May is trying to negotiate with too many people from a position of weakness. And the question is, how do you get back to any kind of negotiating leverage with the EU without a hard Brexit. The US is quite busy in terms of politics. I contended when I talked last week that the shutdown is not about the shutdown. And sure enough, we see from Cindy Adams, Gossam columnist at the New York Post. Let me just read a section of her column recently. It's called Wall Rumblings. Wide open Washington mouth sent info. Per they claim custom and border protection numbers that money sitting right there now unspent. 2017, Congress provided $341 million to replace approximately 40 miles of existing primary pedestrian fencing. By September 2018, 28 miles were completed. In 2018, Congress provided $1.375 billion for 25 miles of new levee financing, 8 to 12 miles of new pedestrian financing, and 61 miles of replacement fencing. To date, there has been no construction with those funds. So DC has, give or take a few bucks, $1.6 billion in fencing border security money nobody spent or maybe doesn't know about. If so, maybe we should stick someone's hand in the cash register, ? So I said last week that the fight is over control of the trade flows back and forth across the border. But I also think the goal of the shutdown may, in fact, be shut down. We see lots of reports that the government, with 30 days of shutdown, can start to lay off people. And you wonder to what extent we're watching a move of radical reengineering to try and starve the civil service. After, 4 to 6 weeks with no paychecks, they're going to be less in a position to fight whatever is coming down. And of course, all during this period, you're having corporate contractors potentially move in and get set up to significantly expand their control of the bureaucracy. Pelosi has reinstituted PAYGO. PAYGO is a very obscure budget mechanism that says if you want to spend more money and increase appropriations, you have to identify that a source for that increase. So you have to dig up a funding mechanism for any increase in appropriation that you want to achieve. Now, it's very interesting. They took PAYGO off, then blew the budget and the deficit to the moon, and now they're slapping PAYGO back on. It's kind of an interesting progression of affairs. You wonder if they're not trying to assert some control over the official budget now that they've just approved through the back door FASB 56. Meantime, I keep bringing up the Jedi contract. The Jedi contract, to me, is the last piece they need to put into place to make Amazon plus Walmart the delivery mechanism for essentially most, if not all, retail transactions that can't be handled by J.P. Morgan and the New York Fed banks. Amazon has put two headquarters, one, in the Fed's area and the other in Langley's and the U.S. Treasury's area, and has done a deal with Lockheed, who's the biggest contractor to the U.S. government by far, and sort of runs the satellite backbone as well as being the lead contractor for the FAA, DOD, and Lord knows everybody, or many of the other agencies. Anyway, so Lockheed's deal with Amazon comes on top of Amazon's deal, picking up the Washington Post and picking up the cloud for the 17 intelligence agencies. And then Jedi will put DOD in that cloud as well. And you, at that point, you're going to have basically an infrastructure to deliver just about everything and centralized database management for what I call the data beast. Anyway, we see Bezos announcing that he's getting a divorce, but all sorts of dirt dished out about his texts and other confidential information. And if you see the way it's being engineered, it looks to me like the deep state is asserting control before Amazon wins the Jedi contract. They want to make sure that they're in control, not Bezos. So it would be very interesting to see how this plays out. But you can't imagine that Bezos would be naive enough to let himself get set up like this. And it sort of reminds you of how sleepy people can get when they've got the deep state wind at their back, and then suddenly it flips. It's very interesting. If you want to see a case study of one that was really very gruesome, watch what they did to Tiger Woods. Very clever, but very gruesome. William Barr, the new Attorney General, is going through the Senate confirmation process. A lot of effort was made to sort of engineer the process beforehand so that he would kind of slide through without a lot of noise. I think they want to avoid another Kavanaugh. I keep telling people that Trump has made a deal with the Bushies, and they seem to have some kind of emotional resistance to understanding that. Kavanaugh was a Bush guy. Powell, who went into Fed, was a Brady guy who's Bush. And Barr was George H.W. Bush's attorney general and worked for George H.W. Bush when he was running the National Security Council as vice president. You see stories from Terry Reid's book, Compromised, of Barr out with George H.W. Bush working with the Clintons to operate the drug operation at Mena, Arkansas. So, you know, this guy is right from the very heart of the Bush cartel and deep experience after being attorney general with the telecom companies. You know, the Bush's claim to fame was their control and understanding of the enforcement courts and intelligence agency line. And this guy is right from the heart of their operations. If you look at the Kavanaugh-Powell Barr lineup, if you look at the president's signal to former President Bush at the funeral, I don't see how you come to any other conclusion but that they have a deal. And certainly if you look at the border squabble, it sure looks to me like once it's over, you know, somebody's lobbying for more of the flow to go through Texas and the Texas banks. You keep running into folks who are deeply embedded in the QAnon, I don't know what to call it, pipe dream, I guess is what I'll call it, but we have Mattis, Dumford, and Kelly, three Marine generals, use their considerable gravitas to get increased DOD appropriations. Then FASB 56 gets put into place. They were all opposed to using mercenary armies. FASB 56 gets in place, put into place by the OMB head and GAO, and then suddenly Mattis, Dumford, and Kelly are out. The OMB head is now chief of staff, and Blackwater is running ads saying Blackwater is coming. And the former Blackwater founder is testifying, saying, oh, we can use mercenaries in Syria. This is pretty obvious what's going on. And yet I had some QAnon devotee today say, oh, well, Mattis, Dumford, and Kelly are off running the military tribunals. No, they're not. Mattis, Dumford, and Kelly are off, you know, figuring out what's next in their lives and getting lots of pretty attractive offers from a variety of players in the national security state, while, you know, Bush players are being moved into place to run the swamp. So this is pretty dangerous what's going on, particularly because the more you fund mercenary armies, the more you have mercenary armies that if you're not funding them again and providing sufficient economic growth for them, they're happy to work for your enemies. Okay, so finally, there's a billboard flashing serious storm warning. And I don't mean serious storm warning in the future, serious storm warning now. Given what's going on behind the scenes in the shutdown, I think it's a very disturbing storm warning, and it really is of great concern. Headline this week that the former Sullivan Cromwell chairman and his wife were killed in a fire at the River House in New York City. Two questions: who is Sullivan and Cromwell, and what is the River House? Sullivan and Cromwell is simply one of, if not the most powerful law firms in the world. It is, Sullivan and Cromwell is Goldman Sachs's lead counsel. It was the firm of the Dulles brothers. Basically, the CIA was operated out of Sullivan and Cromwell before the CIA existed, and then they basically created the CIA. And Sullivan and Cromwell, in my opinion, has been the lead attorney and attorneys engineering things behind attorney-client privilege for the black budget for, you know, since the Dulles brothers set up the CIA. So Sullivan and Cromwell is an extremely powerful, important law firm, particularly overseeing the covert side of the national security state. And the gentleman who died was the former chairman. He was a partner, been at Sullivan and Cromwell essentially his whole career. He had been the chairman from the late 80s to 94 during the kickoff period for globalization and the early period for the rape of Russia. I once read an obituary of someone, of an extraordinary scholar, and the article said that when the man died, it was like a library burning down. Well, this is like a library of the deep state burning down. It's, you can't imagine that the former chairman of Sullivan & Cromwell would be hit. And it looks to me, I would put the chances of this being hit as 80% or greater, pretty high. The River House is the single most socially prestigious building to live in New York City. And the thought that the deep state would do a hit on the River House is pretty frightening, almost as frightening as killing a former chairman of Sullivan & Cromwell. You know, there is, it's hard to imagine a more prestigious professional position in the world than being the chairman of Sullivan & Cromwell. Anyway, why do I think it was a hit? One is, if you look at the descriptions of the fire, it's hard to imagine that a household fire would turn into that, particularly in the River House, where you're talking about very significant construction, smoke alarms, all sorts of systems. It's hard to believe you'd get something like that. The second thing is, there was a pretty lame, pathetic article put out implying that they were smoking in bed. I don't know how you get an 89-year-old former chairman of Sullivan & Cromwell and 85-year-old wife to be smoking in bed at 5 a.m. I think that is a little bit lame. Why in the world, how in the world could this happen? Well, if you look at all the technology you have to make a death of an 89-year-old man look natural, there are two reasons why you would do this. One is, you wanted to broadcast a very clear message to everyone else that it doesn't matter how much social prestige, standing, or money you have, you better be obedient. And if you have significant intel, you better do what you're told and stand down. That's number one. Number two, it looks to me like there was a need to destroy any paper or files and ensure that they had access to get any paper and files that may have survived the fire, particularly if they're in a safe. So it looked like somebody was doing very significant knowledge management. And given what's going on in Washington with the shutdown and what's happening in the debt markets, I think it's pretty frightening. The message is, if this can happen to the former chairman of Sullivan & Cromwell and his wife at the River House, it means no one is safe. Go back again to what I've said several times. With Rockefeller and Bush dead, there has to be a fluid period where leadership is being worked out in the deep state. And it makes you wonder what the deep state Young Turks are up to that the older generation, particularly this fellow, objected to. But it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Michael Ventura. Let me read it to you. Quote, "We all live in the South Bronx because that neighborhood is the unavoidable proof that American civilization can stop. It can stop literally right around the corner. And if it does, nobody can do a thing about it." Well, the intelligence networks that once upon a time dumped drugs and destroyed my neighborhood and my family, you know, are now doing it one way or another at the River House to the former chairman of Sullivan & Cromwell. I guess we all live in the South Bronx now. P&G is preparing to file for bankruptcy and the CEO is out. What the real story is on the California fires, I still don't know. I think this is an issue that deserves a lot of serious reporting. A few people are making an effort to document and track down stories, witnesses. I don't know what will be achieved with the PG&E bankruptcy and how the current investors are going to come out. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Clearly, part of this is protecting them from the liabilities to the extent they're set up to take the blame. I really don't think there's any more important truth in America to understand right now than what has happened with the California fires, how they got started, what technology was used, and how this fits into the reengineering. Somebody clearly has a long-term design of how they want to reengineer California, and with significant changes in transportation and land use, and this is, I'm assuming, part of it, but we'll only be able to tell as sort of the changes roll out. you know, I used to always say during the housing bubble and the financial coup d'etat, to the winners go the spoils. And the spoils, if you follow the trail of the spoils, you can always tell what happened. So I'm not sure how we get to that truth, but just keep saying a prayer that the truth will be revealed. Our hero this week is Leonardo da Vinci, and Leonardo da Vinci is going to be the hero for 2019. This year is the 500th anniversary of Leonardo da Vinci's death, May 2nd, 1519. And for me, this is a wonderful opportunity to partake of the exhibitions and celebrations all around the world celebrating this extraordinary artist and inventor. And you can learn all about it. This week's Food for the Soul has a wonderful article on Leonardo da Vinci and a lot of great da Vinci eye candy. So if you haven't discovered our Food for the Soul column by Nina Hein, who tags herself Your Culture Scout, it's one of my favorite columns in the whole world. I just loved it. When I asked Nina to write this, I knew it would be good. I had no idea how great it would be. Nina is just an incredible resource for understanding culture and what's happening in the world of culture. And she has a fantastic beat on the business side of it as well. And so when she writes her articles, you hear about culture in many different worlds and many different kinds of culture, but you also hear about the business, financial, and economic angle, and she weaves it right in with some great reviews of museums and art. So you really, we do it twice a month, and she's been writing under the byline, Your Culture Scout, and she finally decided to come out of the closet. But her piece on Leonardo da Vinci is wonderful. Let me just read you one paragraph. Leonardo da Vinci was not supposed to achieve any success or prominence. Born a bastard son of a notary, he did not get any formal education. He did not have the right to his father's name or his inheritance, and he had no entry into any Florentine professional guilds that would allow him to be a doctor or a lawyer. And yet, when he was dying after a lifetime of being a chief engineer and an architect to Italian princes, the King of France was at his bedside. Everything that Leonardo achieved in between, he achieved through his incredible talent, an insatiable intellectual pursuit, and an imagination that reached out across centuries into the future. To this day, he stands as a giant of human thought, hardly surpassed by anyone who came before or after. And this is what we celebrate today. So get ready for lots of Leonardo da Vinci in 2019. And let's go to the movies. I've started watching lots of Leonardo da Vinci documentaries. There is a series by BBC. The first one is Leonardo da Vinci, The Man Who Wanted to Know Everything, and Leonardo da Vinci, Dangerous Liaisons. And it's part of a three-part series. It's hard to get the third part, but check those out. It's just a good introduction to the life and accomplishments of Leonardo da Vinci. I'm going to be watching. I just ordered a copy of Leonardo da Vinci or Da Vinci Demons, which is a TV series that Nina writes about in Food for the Soul. So expect more recommendations on the best movies and documentaries on Da Vinci. But the BBC series is a good and lively, interesting introduction. Our interview tonight is the Equity Overview and Rambus Blockbuster Chartology for the 2018 annual wrap-up. Again, I issued a serious storm warning in the U.S. Treasury and fixed income markets. I won't repeat that here. You can listen to the Equity Overview if you're interested. I also recommended you listen to Jeffrey Gundlach's annual review available at the Double Line website. Just click on the webcast section. The Rambus Chartology for the annual wrap-up is extraordinary. I printed it out. It's over 100 pages. It's really a magnificent thing. And if you enjoy technical analysis, it's a great way to get an overview of where we've come in the markets, particularly through 2018 and where we are now. Rambus and I are, you know, I believe we have had a correction. Whether we go into a bear or not, I don't know. We're kind of both on the fence. We added a poster from Rambus, whose handle is The Plunger, who's clearly making the bear case. So I thought you might want to take a look at what is a pretty well done and cohesive discussion or argument for the bear case. But again, I'm not in the bear market yet. I, I believe there's a good chance this will be a correction. So I'm kind of 50-50 between correction and bear. If you look at what's coming in the fixed income market, yes, it could force the equity markets into a bear market, but it could also, equity markets could end up being a safe haven depending on how the central banks and the leadership manage it. I also review the four scenarios we developed for strategic planning under 2019. Get ready, get ready, get ready. You can see the graphic and the four scenarios up on the web presentation. Ask Catherine. Catherine, no need to respond. I'm a new subscriber and I learned of your work through Greg Hunter's website, who I enjoy very much. Thank you for your information, the welcome gift, which I did not expect. The message of real money was not lost in me, and bearing the golden rule was even better and over the top. Thank you so much for your work. Oh, I love that expression, over the top. Dear Catherine, what is going on with Barr for AG nomination? He seems to be a creature from the very deep state. Yes. And if he was truly honorable, he'd come clean and turn himself in. Could he be an insurance bet for the Bushies? Selective swamp draining? I want to believe that Trump is doing all he can to make America great, but Barr does not fit into that very easily. Trump has made a deal with the Bushies. We're watching Bushies being moved in everywhere. I mean, Kavanaugh at the Supreme Court, Powell at the Fed, Barr at Attorney General, and the Marines are out. What does that say to you? Marines out, Bushes in. I think this is pretty clear. I don't know why the QAnon group can't seem to grok this. I'm a great believer in watching actual transactions and facts. You know, to me, that's why I always watch how the money works. And I think we're coming into a radical reengineering of the federal government. It looks to me like the deep swamp is more powerful than it's ever been. So I don't see what this cleaning of the swamp. We're definitely consolidating from the financial coup, getting rid of expendable people and moving to the next phase. But I don't, you know, to me, this idea of cleaning the swamp, you're weaponizing the people who are sick of the corruption and getting their help in cleaning out the people that you want to get cleaned out. There's going to be real effort to blame corruption on the civil service. You can get rid of the civil service and move the corporations in, which is exactly the opposite of what you need to do. And then the author continues, and under the category of they killed her on the death of the Sullivan and Cromwell chairman is yet another reminder that even an 85-year-old man, actually he was 89, his wife was 85, isn't safe from a cleansing project. I wonder if he or his wife were showing signs of guilty consciousness at their ages. Or did he have papers or documents in his lavish apartment? The fire department reported high heat when they arrived. She dies from burns and he later dies at the hospital and limited only to their apartment. And the Daily News headlines reported an elderly couple dies in Eastside Blaze. Sounds like a hit to me. Thank you for all that you and the Solari team for the continuation of humanity. It was my pleasure. Yes, I'm afraid I give it a very high percentage chance of being a hit. It appears there's almost 20% of enlisted American military people are Hispanic. Question, do you think in the near future that there will be a joint military operation with the American military working with the military, Mexican military on Mexican soil to combat the drug cartels? I don't know. It could make sense to do. I just don't know enough. I do know the military has a serious recruiting problem. The general who ran recruiting stated in testimony last year that they could only recruit from 30% of American young people of an eligible age because for mental, physical, or intellectual reasons, 70% were not qualified to join the Marines. And there was a headline this week that said they were looking to recruit people who had green cards. So unfortunately, it means we're going to end up with an army of people who were not drawn from the citizens unless we go to a draft. And obviously there's real political opposition to a draft. Dear Catherine, I served on two citizen advisory boards for the city of Boulder, and one of our annual responsibilities is to review the budgets for the utility and open space departments respectfully. I found these exercises very difficult since the staff normally presented the budgets in ways that they were impossible for a non-accountant to understand. I found that my colleagues on the board had little patience with the process and just wanted to move on to more interesting topics like what designs to use on signs. Out of maybe 50 hours of meeting per year, we spend maybe 2 hours on the budgets. Also, the staff clearly had no desire or intention to discuss the budgets in detail. Someone like Mark Skidmore should offer a class for congresspeople on how to understand budgets and accounting. Actually, Dr. Skidmore and his group does that at Michigan State University. I think they've given classes to new county commissioners, et cetera, to teach them how to do budgets. I will say this, you know, given all the software we have to make things entertaining and accessible, I worked very hard during the 90s to use GIS software to make all this information easy to understand and intuitive and fun. And there is an enormous effort to make sure that government budgets cannot be understood by anybody. And when I tell you that if we as taxpayers and citizens simply insisted that it be made accessible, it could be. But we have to demand it, and we have to insist and stop feeling a lack of confidence because we don't understand it. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a place and basically said, you know, I just, you know, I don't know why. I have an MBA. I was a successful partner at a Wall Street firm and the head of a, you know, a $300 billion mortgage insurance fund. I must be really stupid because I can't understand this. You know, you've got to push, you got to ask questions, and you can't be intimidated. You can't let that happen. Hi, Catherine. I'm a temporary member and love your recent article in Common Core. My son attends a private Christian school and I forwarded it to his principal. She graciously read it and responded. Do you have any other advice? I'm guessing she doesn't understand the surveillance state. And then you sent me some of her comments. She sounds like a wonderful person. No, she doesn't understand the surveillance state. One of the things she says is that you can't teach with robots. You've got to have real teachers. She's right. But what she doesn't understand is there's going to be a real effort once you get schools corporatized to gin up the profits by using robots instead of teachers. And she's right. It shouldn't happen. But I don't think she understands how insane the potential plans are. The other thing is there's been efforts on and off to go to vouchers. And so she doesn't see that yet. But, you know, that push is coming again. The fact that Trump won the election is, in fact, probably slowed a lot of this down. Online systems are still dangerous. She doesn't understand the danger of entrainment and mind control and tracking. And I'm kind of shaking my head or scratching my head trying to figure out what you could give her that would help her. If you haven't read the Salieri report we did on entrainment technology and subliminal programming with Adam Tremblay, I would recommend you read that. I would love to come up with something more targeted to principals and teachers to warn them about the entrainment, subliminal programming, and other mind control on online systems. I wish I had something like that. I'm going to see what I can dig up, or maybe we can ask the guys at TruthStream if they're available or someone else to create, because I think it's really something we ought to have and important. So I'm glad you brought that up. In the meantime, it sounds to me like you've got a great school with a great principal for your kids. So the one thing I would focus your efforts on is asking her what you can, you know, what's on her list that a parent can help her do, because I think the more we have great schools and great principals for great schools, that's the kind of leadership we need to nurture and lift up. So good for you for finding a great school for your child. Then a wonderful new message from the subscriber who wrote about Sun Tzu and the documentary about Confucius. And you ask, what about CIA involvement in Falun Gong? I don't know. It's a great question, but I just haven't read up and studied that. And you also have a lot of great recommendations on books. I want you to know I have over 300 books sitting in the den and library in my must-read soon pile, so I can't promise that I'll read it. We did do a Salieri report on The Art of War that was a very interesting discussion and experience for me. I would love to look at some of these other books. I'll see if I can't. At least I can get them and put them in the pile. Anyway, but thank you very much. I really appreciate your sending those. Dear Catherine, I just finished listening to part 1 and 2 of 2018 annual wrap-up. Your comments on learning how to shun are powerful. Thank you for sharing the fact that you no longer speak with your brother. I'm curious to know how you drew this boundary and how you make others in your circle of family and friends respect your decision. And then you describe some of what you've been grappling with. Here's, you know, this is all about risk management. One of the things you learn is we all have friends and family who essentially there's nothing they wouldn't do for another opportunity to move up the ladder. And they will literally do things that could be very harmful to you. And I, you know, I'm a great believer in risk management. And if someone, if by allowing someone in your life, it creates serious risk that could have repercussions in terms of your time, your money, or your ability to manage your responsibilities to other people, you can't afford to have people in your life. So I've never had any sort of problem doing that. I just, it's a matter of facing facts and then doing what has to be done. It's a little bit like amputating a gangrene limb. You either amputate or die. So I don't know. To me, it's a pretty clear thing. No one has ever suggested to me that I call or contact my brother. I don't have any living relatives that I still associate with who would feel inspired to do that. I have one other relative who I don't speak with, and I've explained to anybody who cared that it would create practical risk for my team at Solari, and consequently, it's a conflict of interest between my fiduciary obligations to my team and my subscribers and any obligation I would feel to somebody as a family member. So it's a very practical thing, and people understand it and the logic of it, and you know, and they respect it. Now, what I would do if I were you is I would just simply ask your relatives to not bring it up again, and simply, you've made your decision, it's not going to change, and to just, it would be better to not bring it up again. And if you, I think if you tell them that it matters to you and you care about it, that they will listen. Someone sent some very good information on the California fire anomalies, and I very much appreciate that. And a link to an interview with Paul Beckwith, who's at the University of Ottawa. So that's very interesting. Again, any information that you think is credible on the California fires, I very much appreciate your sending. Hi, Catherine. Dedicated subscriber, love your stuff. Do you put credence behind Ronald Bernard? He'd be an eye-opening guest if he is indeed the real deal. Sure, you've seen this, but for quick reference, and they sent one of his videos. I've watched several of his videos. I've never heard him say anything that sounded untrue or incompatible with my knowledge or experience of the world. There were no red flags. I've tried to check him out through people I know, and I can't find anybody I know that he knows. Since I do spend time in the Netherlands, I was hoping that I could. So it's still, I'm still hoping if I can find a way to check him out. My only one concern, and this is doesn't qualify as serious. Right at the time that WikiLeaks had a leak in the Podesta emails with a reference to a checkered handkerchief, he pulls out a checkered handkerchief during one of the interviews, and it kind of made you wonder, is this a signal I should understand? Anyway, who knows? But Bernard could totally be on the up and up. I just haven't been able to affirm that yet. Hi, Catherine. I don't really have a question for you. I just wanted to thank you for being a great role model. Oh, well, you're more than welcome. And you talk about an opportunity to spend some time in Costa Rica. It sounds wonderful. I was going to check out your website, but I couldn't find it. It wouldn't come up. Anyway, I don't know what that's about, but I really appreciate that. You're in Costa Rica part of the year, and I've never been to Costa Rica and always wanted to go. So that may be a real opportunity for me because I've always wanted to go, but I don't want to go unless I know people there. Okay, that's it. In closing, look for the Mega Cities PDF and flipbook next week, January 24th next week, the final piece of the annual wrap-up, the real game of the missing money. We're going to go back and start at the beginning and walk all the way through and then bring it down to what it means to you, your pension fund, your investments, your world in 2019 and forward. January 30th, the wellness series. Bridget Mouchet is back for a conversation, CBD or not CBD, with Dr. Robin Sicca. And then February 7th, I'll be interviewing Harry Blaser, The Deep State and the Reengineering of America, Part 2, The Kennedy Assassination and Cover-Up. A detailed review and understanding of the Kennedy assassination and cover-up will tell you a lot about the organization and growth of the deep state between 1963 and the death of David Rockefeller and Bush. We are now watching the death of the people who killed Kennedy. So the next progression to try and make sure that you have a good, deep understanding of what people refer to when they say the deep state. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this evening. Until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, 2019 is a good year to start one. Good night and good luck.